Okay, so when you're learning about betochen, you also have to practice it. It's not enough to just learn about it. The way you practice it is you do targilim, you do exercises. Things happen in life. Things happen to everybody in life, and we need to be alert to the things that are happening in life and have betochen. Things happen to us that look on the surface to be bad, not necessarily catastrophic, evil, bad. Just they look to be bad. And very often we know, we have experience, and if you practice it enough, you know that you will, in the end, see that it was for the good. Something happened that you thought was mamish terrible, whatever degree of terrible, I'm not, you know. And then usually it's not like the worst catastrophic thing. And then you get upset and you get anxious and you, whatever, you're not happy about it. And then you have a look in the end and you say, wow, that was the best thing that could have happened. So those exercises in when things are happening and they don't look so good or whatever, and to mechazak yourself and say, okay, this doesn't look good now, but we know it's from Hashem and we know it's for the good, and therefore we have to have betochen. So those are moments to grasp and to build and to draw on those the next time you have a problem. So just I had an incident last week. I just want to share it with you, because for me it was like just it was a classic. The two stories. There was a friend of mine had a story also, a little story, but it was mamash like it helped me to mechazik this, what happened to me. So I needed to get something from the medical aid. I need a certain apparatus that I need for refuah. And it's very expensive. And the Kupat Chulim pays for it, essentially, if you go to one of the three companies that they approve. So they gave me a list of three. I phoned the one told me they don't have in stock, phoned me back like in 6 months' time, whatever. So they were a waste of time. Found the other one, they never answered. Eventually, I got through to a calling service or whatever, and I left the message. And then I found the third one. They said, we can give you an appointment like in 2 months' time or whatever. So I said, where can I get an appointment? Sooner, whatever. She told me, Be'sheva, I can give you an appointment in 3 weeks. I said, fine, I'll take the appointment in 3 weeks. I need this thing urgently. Not urgent, but it's urgent. What can I do? 3 weeks, okay. So I'm waiting and waiting. I'm very happy. It's like 2 days before the appointment. It's actually, the appointment was on Monday, and this was on the Thursday. I get a call from them to say, we have to cancel your appointment. We have to postpone it for another week. So I was mamash upset. I was like, mamash upset. So I took the appointment. I didn't have a choice. And I thought, you know what? The other company that never phoned me back, I was actually very angry with them as well. You don't phone me back. Who wants to do business with people like that? Anyway, I thought, you know what? Let me phone them. So I phoned them, and one ring, and the woman picks up the phone. How can I help you? So I tell her the story, whatever. She says, yeah, no, we had a problem, whatever. We're sorry we never got back to you. We had a problem with our calling service, whatever, but we're all fixed up now. She says, you can come whenever you want. You don't need an appointment. Just come whenever you want. So I said, fine, I'll come tomorrow. It's a 25-minute drive from Beit Shemesh. They happen to be in a place that's mamash not far from Beit Shemesh. I got in the car, went there. I'll go in there, I sit down with this woman and this guy there. They have to explain the whole story to whatever. He says to me, it's quite amazing. I said, is you from? You probably, you know, what are you going to do on Shabbos with this thing? So I said, I don't know. I assume I just won't use it on Shabbos. So he tells me, well, I'm just telling you now, today, for the first time, we just got now these apparatuses with the Heksha from Isherah Shabbos. It's got a special Shabbos thing built into the apparatus, and you can use it on Shabbos. So That's a very simple, straightforward story, okay? Nothing big there. But I step back and you know how angry I was when they canceled my appointment. If they're not canceled the appointment, I would have gone to the guys in Be'sheva who don't have this machine with me, Shredder Shabbos. Had they phoned me back a week earlier and I'd gone to see them, I wouldn't have got the machine. The machine arrived the day that I got there. I was the second person to get a machine like that in the country. There was somebody there that had been there in the morning, and I got the second one. So I was upset and angry, and but in the meantime, a Kodesh Baruch Hu was setting up the whole thing. A Kodesh Baruch Hu says, "What are you? You don't know what you're doing. Just step out of the way. I'm running things here. I know what I'm doing. I want you to get a machine that you can use on Shabbos. If you're going to run the show, you're going to land up in all sorts of trouble. Just let me handle things." So I was upset, angry about something, but in the end, it turned out not that it was just it turned out good. It was good all the time. It was never not good. When they finally canceled the appointment, that was also good. We have to build those little incidences, because there's nothing catastrophic. Yeah, there was nothing life or death or whatever. It was just irritating. Those little incidences are the practice. That's the targilim, the exercise you do, so that when things get more tough, you're prepared for it. So I wanted to just share with you what made me see that. I didn't see that on my own. I have a friend. He told me, somebody knows how to see things properly. He teaches in Yeshiva Ketani Yad Tifrach. His daughter's getting married. So the couple, they're moving into an apartment in Ofakim. So his wife said she's going with the daughter just before, like, whatever, a few days before the wedding. They're going to go clean the apartment in Ofakim. And he'll come afterwards to help them or whatever, and then they'll come back together. So the Yeshiva Ketani, he teaches in Hasa'ah back to Ofakim for the boys that come from Ofakim. So he was going to daven Ma'ariv and then go back to Ofakim with the Hasa'ah. After Ma'ariv, he sat down and he started learning, and he forgot whatever he was. You know, he was busy in learning whatever, a big masmid. He suddenly looks around and there's no, the Hasa'ah's gone. No more Hasa'ah. The Hasa'ah, the guy's left 15 minutes ago. So he knows his wife's gonna kill him, man. So anyway, so he starts trying to work out what time there's a bus, whatever. He's busy trying to work out buses. The phone rings, it's his wife. She says, "You won't believe what happened. We forgot the key at home. We got to Ofakim. We're at the apartment. We don't have the key. If you haven't left yet, bring the key." So he ran home quickly, got the key. As he was coming out the house, mamash, there was a bus right there. He got on the bus and he went. So he thought he was mamash dead on his feet. He's not getting to Ofakim, his wife. "What are you doing? You're such a shlemazel. Why don't you go?" When he told me this maisa, it made me think of what had happened to me. Exactly the same thing. Something happened that irritated me, upset me. I'm such a, what's going on here, whatever. Hashem was organizing the whole thing from the beginning. You don't have to worry. So we need to remember stuff. Everyone's got stories like this. It's not so outrageous. People have stories like this all the time, but we need to catch ourselves in the moment. That's you know, they talk about practical Kabbalah. I'm talking about practical betochen. We have to have betochen in our hands. We have to practice it. And at the same time, we have to learn about it so we know more and we understand it more. But the most important part of betochen is being alert and practicing and realizing all those things that look like they're not good. In the end, they all turn out good. They always turn out good. Always. We don't always see it. Otherwise, you wouldn't have bechira. If it would always be like that, you would never hear it. So sometimes it doesn't always look like that. David HaMelech went to the grave totally unvindicated. He went to the grave with people calling him a mamzer, and who knows what David HaMelech went through. Only when they couldn't get into the Beis HaMikdash and the gates wouldn't open or whatever, and Shlomo used his father's chus, and then suddenly people realized, wow, who David HaMelech was. But he left this world completely unvindicated. So yeah, you're not always going to see it. But when you do see it, you have to chop around. You have to hold on to it very tight. Okay, so let's start the seventh category, which deals with Olam Haba.
Can I just ask?
Then we'll have finished chapter 4. Then you can either go back and learn chapter 4 again 5 times before you go weiter. But we'll probably go into chapter 5. Yeah.
Can I just ask you, Rabbi, But Lamaisa, even though everything worked out like that in hindsight for the Rebbe, the Yeshiva Ketana Rebbe, but Lamaisa, he forgot to take the Hasa'ah, which he had said he was arranged. I'm saying, on the one hand, Hashem worked it out for him, and he didn't have to worry. On the other hand...
No, that's not betochen. That's not betochen. That's a low level of betochen. He didn't do what he's supposed to do, so Hashem had to miss the web things to work for him. No, Hashem made him late because he knew that the key wasn't gone. The key hadn't gone.
No, for sure.
Hashem made him forget. It wasn't he forgot and now Hashem has to sort things out that he forgot. Hashem made him forget.
Oh, okay.
That's the vault. Why does Hashem do that? So that you can see him. They asked the Brisker Rav. There was a famous Maisa once in Yerushalayim, there was with the Jordanians, there was wars, they were sending rockets across, whatever. Nothing's changed. It's the same like now. They're just the rockets are bigger and more sophisticated. But they used to send these, they call them pagazim, like mortars. And a mortar hit something and it burnt them to flames. A massive fire going on there and whatever. And the whole shchuna there looked like it was going to get destroyed. What's today, Geula, that whole area. And it was Mamash Sakana. 2 minutes later, another pagaz came and it hit one of these big water tanks that they had on the roof. And the water flowed out and put out the fire. Miracle, Ness. So somebody said to the Brisker Rav, I don't know, Hashem makes a fire and then he puts out the fire. That's a big Ness. He could have just made a bigger Ness and not made the fire. What do you mean? Hashem makes a fire and then he puts out the fire. So big deal. Just don't make the fire. And good question. Huh? So the Brisker Rav said, if he hadn't made the fire and put it out, you wouldn't have seen Hashem. Hashem does it that way, said he's Megali himself to you. That's what's going on. It looks like something bad's happening, and then it turns out afterwards that you realize that it was all good. There wasn't any bad, yeah, but that's how Hashem's Megali himself to you. He's revealing himself to you. I could have just phoned them on the first day, got an appointment. They made an appointment for the day that I got there. That was the Mishmeres Shabbos. And I went in there and I got the machine with the Mishmeres Shabbos and Shalom Yisrael. I wouldn't even have noticed Hashem there. It was because it was an inconvenience and they canceled the appointment and I was upset and I had to wait so long. But that's how I saw the Yad Hashem in the whole incident. You can ask questions like, yeah, but Hashem could have got the machine earlier. Hashem could have got the machine to that chevra or whatever. Okay, but said it's Ella Dovasov. I'm trying to build betochen, not build betochen. I'm trying to find ways to increase my betochen, to increase my appreciation of the chokhmah and the avos of the boyer. I'm trying to find ways to minimize it. You know? So, say nachinami. They're not exactly the same story because the one had nothing to do with me. It was completely out of my control. The other story was like, Yerush Lamazel, why didn't you remember to get the asa? So he had a more sophisticated kind of an incident. He had to see that even his shlamazel kart was from Hashem. Okay. Fine. So let's have a look at Chelek Shvi, and then we finish Shadarit. Shadarit is the mamash, it's the backbone of the whole of Shara Betochen. And we'll see when we finish Shadarit. We'll see. I mean, we have to go to Shahay also. We have to do it. But the Ikka avoid in Shara Betochen is pretty much behind us. So now we can actually go back and start learning it again. We just started in Mamotze Shabbos Vad. We just started now for the fourth time. We just went back to the beginning, but we're doing it more focusing more alacha lemaisa, more practically, and trying to tie it into we're trying to tie the Betochen avoid into our Kabbalahs from Yom Kippur. We have a Chabura that's trying to keep our Kabbalahs alive, you know. And use it also through Betochen. Anyway, let's just keep going through it. Aval, Pirush HaChelek HaShvi. Vu B'chesed Elokim al B'chiro V'sugolosoi. The how Betochen applies now concerning the seventh category. Vu B'chesed Elokim al B'chiro V'sugolos. Ba'olam Habo. This is the reward. Capital the reward. That is that a person will have in Olam Haba, which is a chesed from Hashem. For who? For those that he's chosen, and what he calls segula, the ones that are his treasure. Bereiv hatoves asher lo nuchal lesopro. Not according to what they do, not according to their deeds, but with bereiv hatoves asher nuchal lesopro. With so much goodness that you can't count it. It's too big. So now one second. Well, what did we say in the sixth category? Let's just go back to the sixth category. Where is the sixth category? Sixth category, he spoke about, just one second, it's a long story, the sixth category, because he went into all the reasons why Olam Haba isn't mentioned in the Torah. I just want to see where he started this. The sixth category. Now listen carefully. What's the difference between the sixth and the seventh? The sixth category, which we spent a long time doing, and we dragged it out, so we maybe forgot what was in there. Just want to summarize what he said. Aval pirush achelek hashishi, the sixth perek, sixth category. Vug mimula lama zev olam haba. It's the reward you get from mitzvahs in this world and the next world. Yeah, we're only talking about the next world. Okay? That's number one. Asher Adam Roiloi b'maisa tov b'oilom hu shagmul al shnei ponim. How do you get this reward? It says from two ways. Gmul b'oilom hazeh bilvad. There's the reward in oilom hazeh only. Ugmul b'oilom haba bilvad. There's reward you get in the next world. There's reward you get in this world. And then there's reward. Then there's the reward you get in this world and in the next world from one deed. Fine. That's what we learned in six. It means the reward you're getting for your mitzvahs. That's the sixth category. The betochen you have to have in the reward that's coming somehow connected. We saw it's not always directly connected, but it's somehow connected to what you're doing. Both, whatever the cheshbonos they are. You have an easy time working that out. Yeah, we're talking about something else. Yeah, we're talking about the supreme, unbelievable reward that a person is going to get on Olam Haba, which has nothing to do with his ma'aseh. that's going to come, you know why? Because of the unbelievable goodness of Hashem, that's immeasurable, infinite goodness of Hashem, that he gives to those that he's chosen and his treasured ones. Now, for sure, there's going to be a connection between his chosen ones and his treasured ones, who are the ones that are doing his rotzen. You're not going to be from Hashem's chosen ones and treasured ones if you spent your whole day not doing the rotzen Hashem. It's hard to imagine. But it's not tolu bezeh. You're being chosen, maybe tolu bezeh, but the reward is not tolu bezeh because the reward is beyond comprehension. And of course, there's the kashya that we ask, what about Nama de Chasufa? The whole tachlis of the Bria. And I'll just tell you now something very important to remember. The tachlis of the Bria is to bestow goodness on you and the ultimate goodness. And that ultimate goodness has to be earned, because if you get it as charity, it's not the ultimate goodness. And a Kodesh Baruch Hu won't do anything not for that tachlis to be fulfilled, because that's the reason why he created the world. And yet we see a steerer to that here. There's a kasha, yashan v'gadol. It's an old, big question. There's approaches. Hopefully, maybe we'll be zoicha a little bit. Yeah, we'll spend a bit of time. We'll go into it and maybe come up with some approaches. Of all the kashas, a kasha. So now, what's this going to do with my betochen? So it says like this: she is asek besibas hamagias oisel madregas achasidim. First of all, a person should conduct himself and do things and be involved in things that bring one to the level of the pious ones. You have to slowly, slowly be a ben aliyah, slowly, slowly become more and more righteous. And they become worthy of receiving this special reward from Hashem. Now, once again, you have to know, we talk about things that are way beyond our darga, the way they're expressed here. I spoke once about this in one of the breakfast shirim about what precious means today and what it means to us. We'll see. We can't live like they lived. We're not in their darga, we're not in the world, and we're not ready to this. If you try and live like this, you're going to land up in a lot of trouble. So we just, let's see how the principles, and we'll apply them like you do with any rishon. He should practice those things, those precious, that precious hamuasim b'olam hazeh, where you despise all the unnecessary pleasures of this world. What you need, you take. What you don't need, is despicable. And he should take away all the love in his heart that he has for this world and his preferences for it. So what do you do with all the, you know, all these feelings you have for the different things in this world? Replace that with love of Hashem. And he should dedicate himself to just serving Hashem. And he should be, what's the word? He should be, I don't know how you translate, ishtasheya is some lotion of playing, of going bananas, kind of. You should just be completely in delightfulness over the Hashem, whatever. I don't exactly know what the right word is. It's a good thing, though. He should detach himself from this world and the people that live in it. And he should conduct himself in the ways of the prophets and the Hasidim. You understand why this is not shaykh to us, the way it's expressed here. If anybody thinks this is a shaykh to them, the way it's being expressed here, please do me a favor and come see me first thing tomorrow morning. Jonathan, you'll have a problem doing that, but Jonathan knows that this is... No, we'll see there's principles here that, and there's practical things we can take from this. It's not stam, not shaykh. But the way it's being expressed here is being expressed in a language that was shaykh to Rishonim. It's not shaykh to us. So we want now, you want me to be conducting myself in the ways of the Nevi'im and the Hasidim Yishonim, the old Hasidim. And then you'll come to love them like you're supposed to. Like the Rambam says, in the midst of Avas Hashem, you go completely insane with love of Hashem. You won't be able to think about anything else. You won't have your mind anything. All you'll be doing is you'll be thinking about Hashem and your love for him. You'll be completely obsessive. That's the Loshon that the Rambam describes there. The Loshon describes a Loshon of going nuts out of love for Hashem. If you do that, yeah, you just go nuts. Nothing, you won't go nuts because of Avas Hashem. You'll just go nuts. You have to go through this in levels. The Mesiris Yesharim, he's discussing, yeah, that one of the highest levels of the Mesiris Yesharim. We can't even get the introduction sorted out yet. I'm still battling to try and see where the introduction to the Mesiris Yesharim is relevant to me. And yeah, you're talking levels 7, 8, 9. There's way, way beyond us. The Goyin said, in his time already, the getting to level 3 was already kimat impossible. But again, I'm reiterating this because there's a lot we can take from this. Then he will be completely secure and botach in Hashem. That Hashem will give him this unbelievable kindness and chesed in Olam Haba, just as he gave it to the prophets. That's how a person has to have betochen in regard to this reward. I just want to read you from the notes here. Maybe bring it down a little bit. And then there's a whole arichas here as well, which we have to go into as well, which is what it means to be detaching yourself from this world. Let's see what Rabbi Victor Miller says about that as well, because he was in America in our times, even before our times. World looked a bit the world was a bit different than what it's much worse today in this area. And try and just come to grips with a little bit of this here and see what's going on. But I just want to read you. He says like this. He says, Bekitza, what have we said? That Hashem gives special goodness, a special level of goodness in Olam Haba, as an expression of his love for the people that have been very devoted to him in his service. You got your trustworthy servants and you give them special protection. And a person who strives for that level, once again, he may never get there, but he wants to get there, but he knows who he is and he's living the life he is, but he's striving, he's yearning, he's a Ben Aliyah, he's doing what he, on his level, he's doing with the things that we'll see. Practically, there are things that we can do here without being meshuganas. So then he has to have betochen that all his efforts will be worthwhile, that it's there waiting for him, betochen guaranteed. What is the objective of Olam Haba? What are we talking about in Olam Haba? There's only one thing in Olam Haba. We can't relate to it. Like he said earlier in the sixth category where he was explaining why the Torah doesn't mention Olam Haba is because you can't understand it. We have no way of understanding what pleasure without a goof will look like. We don't know what a neshama's pleasures are. We have no way of relating to a world that has no points of reference. It's ultimately to just be close to Hashem. Yeah, to bask in the radiance of the Shem Shechina, the glory of Hashem, whatever those words are. There, yeah. So the fact that we're a physical creature means we can't do that in this world. We're limited. But somebody who makes an effort, yeah, to cleave to Hashem and to be korov to Hashem and to relationship with Hashem and to talk to Hashem. And to trust Hashem in this world as much as he can on his level, in his situation. So he'll get the real reward there. He'll get what he did down here, that effort that he put in here. He'll get that in Olam Haba without any of the limitations. And he quotes the Mesiris Yesharim right in the beginning. In Perek Aleph, the Mesiris Yesharim says that it's dependent on us. To the extent that we subdue our evil inclination, we sit on our yetzer and we don't let him get control of us, to that extent, and the physical desires and everything else that goes with it, and detaches himself from the things that would distance him from the good, he keeps himself away from the things which would keep him away from good, and he gets close to the things that will bring him close to attached himself to Hashem, to that extent, he'll have the attachment in the next world. Ze lo schav mitzvah. It's a natural consequence. You pushed and pushed and pushed out to try and get close to Hashem. There was barriers, there was limitations. You could only get so far because of the nature of each person's situation and the world we live in. When all the barriers are stripped and we go to Olam Haba, the effort you put in, that's there waiting for you. Not as a reward. Just of kulu chesed from Hashem. You reached out to me. Fine, here I am. Down there, I couldn't give you exactly what you wanted because whatever, there's all cheshbonos and because it's a physical world. But when you get there, There's no barriers. There's no limitations. Obviously, according to the effort. Yechasi, that's Mesiris Yishoim. To the effort that you made, there's another reward, which is for the mitzvahs. There's another reward for the Yisurim. There are many, many categories of schar. The reward we're talking about now in the seventh category, and you have to have a tochen that it'll be there for you, is Kulu Chesed from Hashem. Kulu Chesed. Hashem loves him. He cares for him. He's his chosid. He's his beloved one. He's segula. He gives him whatever he wants. Look, Hashem to his deeds. Obviously, to be, once again, to be from the chosen ones and whatever, you'd have to do some nice things, you know. Hitler Yamach Shmo is not going to be from the chosen ones and the segula, you know. He's burning and he's going to be burning for a long time. Terrible screams coming from him. So it is connected, but it's not directly connected. So that's the difference between the sixth and the seventh category. The sixth category is, even though you don't deserve the reward, and even though you really can't earn the reward because you owe Hashem much more than you'll ever be able to do for him to pay you back, but Hashem set up a system where you get reward for what you did. Here, you're not getting rewarded. Hashem's giving out of his love, out of his whatever, his infinite chesed, he's giving you something. It's a gift of love, not something you earn. When you buy your wife flowers on Shabbos, she didn't earn them. It's an expression of love. What's the expression of love? Hashem draws you close to him and lets you get very close to him. Why? Because you tried, yeah, to get close to him. That's the Mesilas Yisholim. So now, the sugya we need to go into, I'm not going to start it now because it's an important sugya. Some of the things he spoke about, yeah, are not just getting close to Hashem and having time for Hashem and you daven three times a day and you learn and you're a good frum Jew. We're talking about a whole paradigm shift here, a whole transformation of the way one approaches things in this world, the Olam Hazeh, how one looks at the physicality of Olam Hazeh, how he, Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, detaching oneself. It's not a possible thing practically to go ahead and do. It requires a person to be very honest with himself. It requires, we have a whole bunch of stuff. You're busy raising a family, you're busy this, there's many, many, many facets in this diamond of being a Peiresh today. And to do it successfully, and to do it besimcha, because that's going to be the barometer of how successful you are, how besimcha are you. If you start being Peiresh and you become depressed, a psychologist once told me, he had a patient, client, whatever, you'd appreciate this, Rabbi Freim. So he had this kid, he was a Baal Tshuva, he was in a yeshiva somewhere, he was very depressed. So the psychologist told me he was trying to get what was going on with this guy. So you asked him, tell me, what do you enjoy doing? You know, what are your hobbies? What are your pastimes? Someone's depressed. You try and get them to do things they enjoy. You can't be there, you know. So I wanted to know what this guy did. He said, no, he likes hiking. He's very into like going on hikes and whatever, you know. He takes a tent and whatever, and he goes up. So I said to him, when was the last time you went hiking? He said, no, when he came to yeshiva, like when he became a Baal Tshuva. Okay, I said, what else did you enjoy doing? He said, no, I enjoy reading. I enjoy reading novels and whatever. So when was the last time you read a novel? He said, no, when I became a Baal Tshuva, I went to yeshiva. He said, I didn't have to ask any more questions. Well, of course you're depressed. Well, what did you think was going to happen? You're throwing away all the things you enjoy. You've got nothing to replace them with. That's not the way. That's not the spiritual journey. Spiritual journey is you don't throw anything until you've got something valid to replace it with. Otherwise, you just become a big hole. As it says in the Pasuk, Bo Reik Ein Bo Mayim. The pit was empty, there was no water. What was there? Snakes and scorpions. If you empty out a pit, something's going to fill up the space. The Yetzirah knows that. The Yetzirah cuts you off from all your pleasures. And even if they might not even be kosher pleasures. You know? But a person needs to test his simcha levels, where you're holding in simcha before you start chopping yourself off. And we'll see also, Mitzvah Hashem, we'll go into this in depth next week, Bezrat Hashem, that it's not just totally on you. You have a wife, you have children, you have a family, whatever. You may be able to live like a hermit, like a pirush. But you may be surrounded by people who need things, you know, and need it's a complicated sugya, not so complicated in theory. In theory, it's not so posh, it's not so difficult. But to try and live like this and at the same time, live with everything that's going on around you in the world we live in and maintain this kind of precious in this world is not so simple at all. You have to be, it requires a certain amount of greatness, and that's the opportunity given this generation. The Nevi'im and the prophets and whatever, it was easy for them to be Pirish, because that was the way of the world then. People used to leave their wives, you know, Rabbi Kiva left his wife for 12 years. That was the norm. He went for 24 years. Oh, that was already why Rabbi Kiva. But leaving your wife for 12 years to go off to yeshiva and learn, that wasn't an unusual thing. Today, leaving home for 12 hours is already, you know, someone's calling the cops to find out where you are. Yeah, we have to know where we are. You can't, and to do it in such a way that the people around you aren't suffering because of your, you know, deep desire for all of this. So we have to, it's got to be, but there is what to speak about here. It's not just something we're turning around and saying, well, it's not shaykh for us. No, that was then. No, there's a lot of avoider that we can do today in this area that's normal and practical and shaykh to us. I mentioned this before, your magid share. I want to, maybe just let me stop the recording and then I'll say this and it's going to hear it.